Good evening and welcome to As the Worm Turns. This is KVNF's live call-in gardening show. I'm your host, Jill Spears, and I am here, of course, with one of my favorite worms, guru gardener Lance Swaggart. Good evening, Lance.
Good evening.
Great to see you. I think Lulu is stuck in the tomato patch.
Or gone to the dogs is what she
gone
said.
Gone to the dogs, even. Yeah, probably. But she'll be back next week, and we have a special guest in the studio tonight. He's been here before, and it's Ron Godin from the CSU Extension Office. Welcome, Ron.
Thanks, Jill.
Good to have you here, and I'm very prepared, I thought.
You are.
I pulled my notes out.
She's got notes everywhere.
That's what you do when a soil scientist is in the house. I mean, really.
Notes.
It's true. I learn a lot when you're here, and we're going to talk about soil and getting ready for the winter and kind of getting ready for the summer even next year, right?
Planning away.
So I'm going to give the phone numbers because this is your opportunity to call in and ask a question from the experts. 527-4868 or 1-866-KVNF now. And we're just going to get into cover crops. Let's do that.
Yeah.
It's one of the things that helps with our soil diversity. And we're here and talking about soil health and diversity. So what should we be planting right now for cover crops? And why do we want cover crops?
Well, I'm still planting buckwheat. And I also have a field pea that's not winter hardy. So those are the things I'm systematically planting as things clear up. And I've tilled in actually two different patches of buckwheat that were planted earlier.
And so your crops right now are things you're going to till in. They're not winter hardy. You're going to till this all in to be sitting over the winter?
Yeah. You can mow it and leave it too.
Yeah.
And you want to start also with these cover crops, you can also add some other ones, some different grasses, and maybe some other legumes, lentils, for just a short growing season, maybe a month, maybe 2 months, and then either mow them, knock them down, and you can cover them with bales of alfalfa. There's plenty around this year, and it's fairly inexpensive. And that way, the bugs in the soil will keep working throughout the winter, and it'll be ready for an early spring garden. That's kind of our strategy we've been talking about for early spring garden.
Right.
It's a bit different for cover crops if you're going to do if your first crop in your garden or part of your garden is going to be summer. And you can plant, I would plant some winter rye because it has allelopathic properties. And that's just a $10 word for $2 definition. And
it just
means that it gives off chemicals that stop or inhibit seed germination in weeds or in anything, but mostly in weeds next year.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So we combine rye with hairy vetch, which is a legume, and you want to make sure your hairy vetch is inoculated with the proper rhizobia bacteria so it makes nitrogen. And so they'll go dormant in the winter, and as soon as it warms up in the spring again, they'll start growing. So about a month before you plant your winter garden, you can mow it or knock it down and till it in, and in a month it'll be ready for and you'll have all the nutrients you need for your summer crop.
Wow, that sounds like
and you plant
like a
right in it.
Yeah, you can wait. I usually recommend people wait 3 weeks to a month to let it break down.
Yeah, that's what I mean, but you're not tilling or anything. You're just going to plant right in the stubble.
Yeah, for mulching, it's going to help conserve water in the summertime.
Mm-hmm. Or slow down wind erosion if you're in a windy spot.
Right.
This legume and lentil thing, I don't know that we've talked about that being a cover crop before.
Well, there's all sorts of stuff out there. Lentils is a legume, and I've never used it. But what were you using down there in Palisades? It's broccoli.
Broccoli for a cover crop.
Uh-huh.
But that was for fruit trees to disinfect the soil of different bugs in the soil that hinder root growth on fruit trees. So we were using broccoli as a disinfectant instead of using chemicals.
Yeah.
And it's one of the better ones for between if you're going to go peach to peach or stone fruit to stone fruit or apple to apple.
Fascinating.
And there's all kinds of different ones. But for legumes, there's dozens and dozens of legumes, and there's people that sell the seed everywhere. But a good thing to do is to search on the internet And there's several what they call periodic tables of cover crops.
Oh, okay.
And they give you the cool season grasses, the warm season grasses, the cool season broadleaves, the warm season broadleaves, and lots of suggestions for different legumes for different times of the year. Mm. And there's several of them. There's Sutherland's, and USDA has one also. It's just called periodic table of cover crops. Lots of suggestions. And any type of legume, if you inoculate the seed with the right rhizobia bacteria, there's one for peas and beans and lentils, another one for vetches, another one for alfalfa. But wherever you buy the seed, they'll have the inoculant with it.
Okay.
And so then it makes nitrogen. They'll take atmospheric nitrogen and turn it into fertilizer nitrogen for your plants. Mm-hmm. And that's why legumes are so great for organic.
Yeah. Now, will lentils survive the winter?
No. Not here.
I've heard different things about lentils.
And you might be able to cover them. I kind of doubt it.
Yeah.
It's still pretty cold. The only thing I know would be there's an Austrian winter pea that's a legume. Hairy vetch will survive the winter, and there's several others, but they're very limited as far as that winter, like a winter wheat type crop or winter rye. Triticale, winter barley, lots of different grass-type crops also.
Yeah, I've noticed planting the Austrian winter pea that you don't want to be really big going in.
Mm-hmm.
It has a tendency to winter kill.
Right.
You only want it an inch or two.
Yeah, you want the growing tip.
So it's a little early yet to plant that.
There you go. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You want the growing tip just below ground level so it doesn't freeze.
Yeah, so you're kind of thinking of the timing of when these cover crops work well as a component that they have to help your specific problem or need
correct.
In the soil.
It depends on when you plant them and when you harvest the cover crop, depending on what your soil needs. If you need some long-term organic matter, humus in the soil, if you're looking to build that, you want to let your cover crop get a bit older. So it's has more lignin, it's more stemmy rather than leafy, and that takes a longer time to break down, and that will give you the long-term organic matter in the soil. If you need something quick, then you want to cut it when it's real leafy, before it gets stemmy and older, and till that in or work it into the soil, and that breaks down, the leaves break down real quickly and release their nutrients really fast. So depending on what you have in your soil or what your soil needs to be healthy, you can manage that depending on when you cut that cover crop.
Right. So a lot of great things you can do with cover crop. And we're going for diversity in the soil, right?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. We're promoting, if you're going to plant cover crops, to try to do at least 8, probably more for a summer cover crop to do 8. Scientists are looking for a way to improve organic matter in the soil without tillage, because tillage is just not so much in a garden, but in a farm situation, it really wrecks the soil. It aerates it and kills the bugs and just adds heat. So we're trying to figure out a way, how do you add organic matter without tilling it? So cover crops is one of the first ones that we started researching really in depth. Some guys are using 10, 12, 15 different species of cover crops at the same time. So the roots go into all the different niches in the soil. So when you cut the cover crop or crimp it and lay it down for mulch, your organic matter is the roots that are in the soil. So if you have, the more you have, the more organic matter. So you can build it without tilling.
Wow, that's great. Hey, I'm going to invite a caller into the conversation because it is our special worm, Lulu, on the line from over in Carbondale. This is crazy. Hi, Lulu.
Hi, you guys.
Hi.
How's everybody doing?
Good.
Awesome.
Awesome. You have Ron there tonight?
Ron is here, and we're talking about soil diversity and cover crops.
Oh, most excellent. And I thought that was really interesting what you just said about in a big farm situation, but not necessarily in a garden situation, the cover cropping really works. How big, how many acres would it take to justify, or how many, I'm not saying this very well, how big of an area would be beneficial to cover crop versus till as a garden?
It's beneficial in any size, But in the size of a garden, you can till, because you can replace the organic matter with cover crops and a lot more easily because it's affordable on a small scale.
Right.
On a large scale, if you get like half an acre or bigger, an acre, it's really tough to bring in enough manure, enough compost to replenish the organic matter over time. So you want to grow cover crops to do that for you.
Gotcha.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, see, there you go. That makes sense to me. That makes perfect sense. Yeah. So it's about how you reinvest in the soil overall. And in a big picture, you have to produce your organic matter right there on the in the soil and on the soil. But in a smaller picture, in a smaller area, you can rely on supplementing, just adding to, because it's a smaller area. You can get a dump truck load of manure and do, you know, fairly good sized garden.
Correct. Yep. Plus, just your own household compost pile is mm-hmm. enough for a small garden.
Yeah.
Also.
Yeah. Yeah. Huh. Hi, Lance.
Hi.
Hi, Jill.
Hi, Lulu. Good to hear from you.
How are the dogs?
Oh, the dogs are great. Gosh, the dogs are great. We've been having a really... I'm here in Carbondale, and I've been helping out at the National Sheepdog Finals. So these are the top teams of sheepdogs the country, and some even from out of country. And, you know, they're all competing, and they're just... really amazing to watch these dogs. And I'll tell you what else is amazing is just the organization and the organizational skills that it takes to have enough sheep so that the dogs can chase them around. And, you know, I'm telling you, you know, it's amazing. Like all of a sudden you got 800 and some odd new sheep on the ranch, you know. And it's, oh, my goodness.
Go get them.
Yeah. So it's really pretty cool, and sorry I'm not there, but I'm glad you guys are carrying on, and it's really good to talk to you, Ron. I'm glad you're there keeping everybody squared away.
We're keeping your seat warm, Lulu.
That's right.
Keeping my seat warm? Nice. That's awesome. All right. Well, I just wanted to check in and let everybody know that I'm really glad they're listening, and...
Right on.
See you again, and I'll see you next week.
Next week.
Not even a hope. Okay.
That's right. Have fun,
I'll
Lulu.
Be back.
Okay.
All
yeah.
right.
Bye.
Thanks
All
for
right.
checking in. Have fun.
All right. Bye.
Bye. All right. And, you know, other listeners can call too. 527-4868. 1-866-KVNF now. We did get an email since our last show, and it was from James down in Montrose. And he's asking a couple questions. One is about cold frames for early planting, and then how well hops might do in Montrose. And Ron, you have a lot of experience with hops.
I do, and hops will grow really well in Montrose. They need three things: sunlight, heat, and lots of water, and they'll do well. We got quite a few growers with lots of acres coming on in the Montrose Olathe area, and it's mm-hmm. doing really well. We're real happy with the yields. We're doing as well. We're growing as good and better quality hops in this area than they do in the Northwest.
Wow.
So we're
really
happy about that.
Yeah, really seems like a crop that's come on over the last decade, mm-hmm. maybe.
It's starting, mm-hmm. yeah. Mm-hmm. It's really good.
You've worked out the varieties that work here?
We did. I started in about 2001 figuring out what varieties work and which don't. And for the most part, the European varieties don't work well here because my theory is it's just too dry here. They've uh-huh. evolved in a wet climate. But the ones that they've developed in Washington and the Yakima Valley do real well here.
Okay.
So those are the ones you want to pick, plus the ones you brew with that
right.
you mm-hmm. like.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
You were talking about bugs on hops a little bit earlier before the show, and I thought it was fascinating on how there's been a lot of aphids on the hops.
Yeah, one of the insects that we deal with quite a bit is aphids in insects, is the insect mostly we deal with. There are some others. But there's a interesting relationship between aphids and that we have a lot of stone fruit trees around here, peaches, plums, apricots.
Right.
In the wintertime, or in the fall right now, the hop aphid is laying its eggs in the bark of the stone fruit tree. And so to stop the aphid, most growers are great. They do a dormant oil spray and a delayed dormant oil spray, and that smothers the eggs on the bark. But if there's a lot of wild trees also. But in the springtime, the aphid hatches, migrates over to the hops, and spends the summer in the hops, having fun, smelling all the good hops. And in the fall, they go back and lay their eggs on the trees. So there's a lot of wild trees, and it's given us some fits with aphids in the hops.
And trying to figure out that switchover
How to stop.
Vacationing back and forth on the plants, yeah. So hops can do well in Montrose. And how about the other question,
cold frames.
Mm-hmm. And cold frames working with cover crops. What about that?
Oh, cold frames. We're pointing at who's going to answer this? Yeah. Cold frames are, depending on the size, they work really good, and you could start them now. And you could do any type of soil prep, and or if you want to do cover crops, this was particularly to start in the spring. So, you know, you can get them ready, plant a cool weather cover crop, and let it sit there all winter. And I don't know how you'd plant it. If it just put plants in it, started plants, or you can actually seed it.
Mm-hmm. Seed it by hand now?
Yeah,
with
yeah.
Right.
It's warm enough to grow for a couple of months before you'd have to.
And then you can go your actual crops. You could probably plant in February. You know, that's when the day lengths are starting to lengthen enough that you'll get plant growth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I'm going to plant a little cover crop in it now to get the soil ready.
You could
by February.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the soil thing I think makes such a difference. Sometimes you think about maybe soil you've planted in before in your life, maybe in a not so rich and fertile area. It's like, how did anything even grow in that soil? Really, it's dirt, not soil.
And the other thing, I mean, there's also sheet composting. You can, or what does they call it? Spaghetti composting? Spaghetti beds where they just alternate layers of organic materials of different sorts with a layer of manure mixed in, maybe even some soil for a good garden soil, not just
it's got a lot of bugs in it.
Yeah. Yeah, I've actually donated soil to different projects like this. And just let that sit there like that and break down inside the cold frame. And it'll warm up enough that they'll work slowly. And then you can go back in February or early March.
You got to feed them. You got to feed the bugs.
Yeah. So
the bugs,
yeah,
exactly.
So you'd have to might put in a little bit more.
Organic matter of some sort, compost, something for the bugs to eat.
Right.
And break down over the wintertime, and you'll get it in the spring.
And I think we talked about worms being at the top of the food chain, didn't we, at one time?
Yeah, we did.
Yeah. Healthy soil, that's what it's all about. And we have Bob on the line with a question. Good evening, Bob.
Good evening. One straw revolution.
Uh-huh.
Is that valid? That's what you're talking about, basically, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a great book.
I never read it because I never had a place to grow crops. I was busy, but, you know, I heard of the principle and I thought, this is brilliant. Because I'm aware, when you plow and you turn over all those inches of soil, you have a different strata every, inch? So if you're turning over 18 inches, you're changing it by a factor of 18, if you know what I mean.
Something similar, yeah. It's a little bit different here than it is in Japan because it's fairly wet there, and here it's fairly dry. But it's the same principle. You start turning things over and exposing all these soil microbes to air and oxygen. It just kills them. It dries them out.
That's where I'm coming from. And also that they don't live in that environment. They're not used to light and things like that.
Yeah, and they're also depth specific. 2 inches, 1 inch, you know, 12 inches. So when you turn it over, you're turning the stuff that's way deep up top and the stuff that's on top way down. And so they either die or find their way back.
Yeah, that's what I meant. Well, thanks, guys. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Bob.
All right.
Appreciate the call.
Yeah, I wish I could find my copy, my two copies.
this is a book about soil and tilling or not tilling. Yeah. Is that what we're talking about here?
Yeah, he Bob's talking about? Developed a technique of growing mainly rice. And rice is really labor-intensive the way that we do it in the modern world. Or even way back then, it was still all done by hand.
Right.
And you had the planting bed and plow in the fields when it was wet and stuff. And he just developed a way of... he actually seeded it in the fall with the rye and he harvested the rye, and then it was warm enough for the rice to come up. And when he after he got the rye off, he would just go and throw the straw every which way. It didn't matter. You know, he wasn't. And the same when he harvested the rice, the straw went every which way. And mm-hmm. And he did have some white Dutch clover, I think, in there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And the way to slow down the weeds so that the next crop could germinate was right. He flooded the field, which is what rice paddies do.
Right.
But otherwise, there's no plowing. There's mm-hmm. no hand planting or anything like that. It's pretty incredible.
You got a different, similar picture, but also there's a lot of philosophy in there that I really liked also.
Uh-huh.
That came from his one person doing this,
is
starting this revolution, just because he's doing it and figuring out a way.
Right.
It can be done. One straw, one person at a time.
Right.
Yeah. What's mm-hmm. And I liked another phrase he had in there is, I didn't go into farming to make money. I went into farming as a way of life.
And it's like, that's good.
Great, you know.
Right.
You know.
Right.
And it's just like, yes, that works.
Right. And I think that is happening for us with gardening and mm-hmm. people being aware of food and good food and mm-hmm. soil rich and all these great things. And I think both of you and people like Lulu that educate us all, because that's what it is all about, is helping us understand. We probably have time for another call, 527-4868 or 1-866-KVNF now. And Ron, we have a lot of new people or people moving to the Western Slope that haven't lived here before, and they're looking to change up their gardens or change up their lawns specifically. You're seeing a lot of that this summer.
I'm getting quite a few questions about people getting rid of lawns, and I recommend gardens first. But if they want something, they're also looking to plant native plants. And pretty soon is the time to start planting natives. We want to plant them late fall or a frost planting after the first frost because lots of native plants have dormancy in them, and it takes a freeze-thaw cycle to break this dormancy. And plus we get winter moisture, which will help with germination in the spring once it gets warm enough. So just a little tip, if you want to plant some native plants, probably October, November, early November, if it doesn't stay too warm. You don't want them to mm-hmm. wake up before winter time, because then they'll kill.
Right.
They'll winter kill. But plant them late enough that you don't have to worry about them germinating, and they'll come up in the springtime, and it's really something.
That's great. And we're talking like different grasses, bushes, mm-hmm. shrubs, just anything that's Colorado.
Most of the native grasses in Colorado are bunch grasses, like buffalo grass and mm-hmm. grama grasses. They're bunch. They're not like a lawn type grass. It's
right.
more of a bunch.
Definitely.
And they go dormant in the summer when it gets real hot and dry. And so you got to expect that. It's not going to be lush.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But they'll come back as soon as we start getting rains, the monsoons or late summer rains. They'll green up again.
Yeah, I think I've seen more variety of lawn grasses here in Paonia than I ever have anywhere. It's fabulous because you never see some of those things growing, and you actually get to experience mm-hmm. it and walk on it. And some of them are pretty darn lush, you
mm-hmm.
know?
They are.
So.
Yarl makes a great lawn.
Yeah, it does. It makes a really good
Yarl.
Yarl.
Yarl, yeah.
And you can keep
Yarl.
It mowed low and it stays green.
Green and it's soft
it doesn't
and
take
feathery.
A lot of water.
Yeah.
Yeah, is that feathery that you put mm-hmm. on when you have a cut or something
yes,
like that?
Yes, that's mm-hmm. medicinal thing quality. Mm-hmm. One of them is that if you cut yourself and there's yarrow there, put it on the cut and it will stop it from bleeding.
Okay.
Faster.
Hmm.
All right.
Great.
You know, supply a yarrow when you're doing your yard work. Great.
Yeah.
All right, 527-4868, 1-866-KVNF now. Ron Godin, soil scientist from the CSU Extension Office, is here tonight, and we're very happy to have him. And, you know, how did the fruit trees do this year? I mean, the harvest, bumper crop, crazy.
It's still coming in.
Still coming in, yeah.
Yeah.
It's still coming in. It's It was an amazing, amazing year for fruit this year because we didn't get a late freeze.
No late
and
freeze.
Everything. Mm-hmm. Pretty much everybody had everything.
Mm-hmm.
And how about the gamosis stuff that we had talked about
it's
earlier?
Getting better. We're getting a handle on it using, with the organic folks, using neem and tea tree oil. And as soon as you see the gum or the gumball, if you have a small size, it's tough on a large orchard.
Mm-hmm.
But once you see the gumballs, to cut it off and paint the wound, just take a knife and scrape it off and paint the wound with tea tree or neem oil, and that tends to reduce the infection. And the sooner you get it, the better, before that gumball starts turning colors. When it's still clear is the best time to get it.
Oh, okay.
So it doesn't sporulate.
Clear
and
gumball.
It can sporulate in the winter time even, because we have such intense sunlight here in the winter.
Right.
That if that gumball gets to 50 degrees, it'll sporulate in the winter, and that's when we're pruning, when there's wounds, and that's when it starts to spread for the most part. I mean, it'll spread in summer. But we don't have too many wounds because we don't prune in summer. But
right.
Wintertime is the time when we're finding out when it's really getting us.
That's nerve-wracking, I'm sure. And this is a little similar to the hawthorn cedar rust that we were talking about last week, Lance.
No, not
similar at all.
No, but we did have that caller, and they said there was a distance, and it's 1 mile.
1 mile,
from
okay.
the cedar for your fruit trees or hawthorns. And it also said that it's the eastern red cedar that's the most susceptible, and it's cultivars. You know, the other Rocky Mountain junipers don't really get it. They can, but they don't. And the Pfizers and junipers we plant in the garden, they can get it, but it's not really there. It's really the eastern red cedar. And the Seedling Tree Program was selling them as windbreaks. And I actually have some.
Really?
Yeah.
So.
And that's where, and so they were bringing it in, not realizing that cycle, that going back and forth.
The rust cycle.
Yeah.
Hey, we have a caller all the way from Lake City on the line. Good evening, Brenda.
Hi. Hi, I know we're pressed for time now, so
go ahead.
I have, well, a question and a comment. I live at 8,700 feet, and hops thrive here, just thrive. I've got them all over my yard. And they're just everywhere. They're beautiful. I love them. But the question I have is about cover crops. If you plant them, how do you dig them in the spring? How do you plant your seeds with the cover crop there?
There's a couple of different ways. If you don't want to till, you can use it as a mulch. And typically we call it crimping it. Since it's an annual, if you just break it down, you can even do it with your feet walking through, or we have crimpers like a roller, you know, a heavy roller that'll break the plant stem, and then use it as mulch. And on a larger, like a farm scale, we use two coulters that will open up a small gap and the seed drops in there. If you're doing
it... Well, mine's a small garden.
Right.
Do you need to dig the roots out or not?
No. Once you kill an annual, once you crimp it,
the
annual will die.
Yes.
Yeah, it's just cover crops. We just recommend annuals.
And what were you saying? Ryegrass and
rye and hairy vetch. Winter rye and hairy vetch. Winter wheat is another good one to plant.
Okay, those are annuals. So you just knock them down. You don't have to dig them up.
Right.
Okay. Well, thank you so much. And hops do well here. And actually, the hops I have that do the very best, they never get watered.
Right.
They just grow wild in an area where I don't water.
Uh-huh.
And then I have ones I do water because I want them to climb this trellis. But they seem to do well in both circumstances. So at 8,700 feet,
hops
dry.
Sounds great. Good to know.
Okay, well, thanks for the show.
Thank you, Brendan.
So informative.
Thanks for your call. Appreciate it.
Bye.
Bye. All right. Ron, pleasure having you here again.
Thanks so much for inviting me.
We appreciate it. We'll see you again, hopefully. And Lance, we'll see you next week.
I'll be here.
Lots of work to do before then, huh?
You don't want to look at my hands.
We'll have the hand test next week.
Okay.
It'll be very dirty. DJ Leah Love's coming up with One Woman's Perspective. Thanks for listening to As the Worm Turns on KVNF.
You are equipped with taillight neon. You've got a cute fast pocket master, which you can make both slow and faster. I don't know who you took a shine to, or who you're about to make a sign to. I got a gal that I love so. Low, little low, and low.